Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. So, do you ever try to do some companion planting in your garden? Some plants thrive on being grown together, and the Oneida Nation members, past and present, know that well with their three sisters growing tradition. Crystal Meltz, our guest next, is a dietetics intern through the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay. She's a member of the Oneida Nation of Wisconsin. She's also the volunteer assistant to the Oneida Farmers Market manager. So it's great to have her with us today. She's going to talk us through a farm-to-table lesson plan she created, and we'll talk about the health needs she sees in her community, as well as the importance of being mindful of our health. So, do you have questions about the Oneida Nation or the Three Sisters growing techniques? What are some health needs you see in your own community? I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And Crystal Meltz, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us.
Hi, Larry. Thank you for having me.
Tell us a little about your background and how you got interested in dietetics.
Well, I am not your traditional student, I'll tell you that. But ultimately, food. Food. I love food. I love every single part of it, growing it, processing it, cooking it. I always have. And I guess when I got done with school, high school, which is quite a bit longer, and this is why I'm not a traditional student. I'm a little bit older than everyone else. But when I started my college experience, it was hotel restaurant management, and I loved it. I loved the industry. It's fun. It's, you know, exciting. And I did that for about 5 years. And then all of a sudden, one day, I had a panic attack out of the blue. And I've never experienced something like that in my life. And so that kind of started my journey to here, because, you know, I did do the medical route and did some medicines and things, but they really didn't work with me. Like I kind of got
strike
more,
a chord.
yeah. You know, like I wasn't able to eat and I wasn't able to sleep. And so I just started studying. I started learning everything that could be possibly going wrong with my body at that time. And honestly, I never stopped. And, you know, I started learning about vitamins and supplements and, you know, you name it, I was studying it. And it happened to, during the studying time, I came upon a job that the Oneida Nation had, and it was at June Hickwa Retail. And when I seen that name, I had no idea how to say it, spell it. Like, I was like, what is that? You know, what is that? So anyways, long story short, I ended up getting the job with June Hickwa, and June Hickwa at the time was very different than what it is now. So it was three components to the program: more educational, the organic farm. You know, they had the responsibility of growing our traditional white corn. They had organic gardens, berries, chickens, and then we had a cannery, and the cannery would take, you know, all that food and process it for us. And then I worked at the retail store, which is more of a, you know, outlet to the community to get these foods out to the community. But also in that store was, you know, all of our tea blends and our salves and, you know, tons of herbs and lots of vitamins and supplements. And so there truly began, like, my journey even into culture. Because, yep, being an Oneida tribal member, that was fine, but I was more like a city girl, and I didn't have a lot of cultural experience. So, you know, the men and women from June Hickwa, they really played a pivotal role in teaching me and guiding me, I guess, through our cultural, you know, beliefs and whatnot. And so then, again, never stopped learning. I got years and years of experience of learning the herbs and the, you know, food as medicine and plants as medicine, and what kind of went behind all of those scenes. And then, you know, I got to meet the community. And that's where, you know, I could, you know, talk with the community members and, you know, see different health issues. And if I didn't know something, I'd be like, oh, well, let me look it up, you know, and I'll get back. And I would research and just keep learning. You know, I just always kept learning. And it got to the point where, 10 years into this, I wanted to learn more. So I went and got my master's degree in human nutrition. And then I'm like halfway through my master's degree and I'm like, you know, what am I going to do with this? Because I ultimately would love to get into like the clinic and be able to work with the community members that way. But with, you know, a master's degree, you don't get to just do that, you know? And so I'm like, well, my next option then is to become a dietitian. And so there began my journey into dietetics. And here we are.
And here you are. Wow. And your understanding, I'm sure, of wellness has changed a lot over those years.
Oh, you have no idea. Like when I was going through the panic attacks and things like that, like I was not the person who I am today. You know, I didn't eat the same. I didn't think the same thoughts. It's night and day, to be honest.
Well, you've worked as a coordinator of the Oneida Farmers Market in the past and now are the assistant. What are some of the obstacles you see in your community and area that, I don't know, people get stuck on when it comes to healthy living?
I think a lot is the convenience factor. Like how do I make this quick, or what's the quick fix? You know, like I don't have time. I think time isn't like a bigger, you know, key there. And I think it kind of comes down to prioritizing a little bit too.
Yeah. You wonder in these COVID times if maybe that's changed a little bit and people do have a little more time now when it comes to healthy food and cooking at home and so forth.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, you can see that even so I do growing and gardening and processing and cooking and just this year alone, to get canning lids and tops like that, it was impossible and expensive. And that's because so many people this year have taken, control kind of their food systems, you know, like the grocery stores were getting crazy and the food was coming off the shelf. And so a little bit of fear, I think, kind of made us be a little bit more responsible for our food, where it came from and how we're preparing it, things like that, for sure.
Yeah. You think there's still a need for education around food and around cooking?
Oh, yes. Yeah, absolutely. You know, like there was a recipe, I guess, and one of the community members was like, well, what is this? And it was arugula. And so like just that simple thing of, you know, where do you find that in the grocery store? What is it good for? How do you make it? How do you eat it? You know, like it's those types of things that we're not familiar with. And so a lot of times we just kind of back away from it, but just having that little bit of, you know, experience with it or speaking with somebody who does have experience, it's not a scary obstacle anymore. And you can see like when you're looking at social media or whatnot, there's so many different food demos that are going on and you know, healthier eatings, and you can make this or swap this out. And I think things are moving in a really good direction.
Yeah, I think so as well. As part of your internship, you created a farm-to-table lesson plan on something we call the Three Sisters.
Yeah, with Juniqua, I got to know the Three Sisters very, very well, especially the corn, and learned a little bit about their spirits and things like that, and how they work together. And when Wello had asked me to create this farm to school project, I'm kind of like, well, what are you guys thinking? What are you looking for? And I'm like, here's my experience. And they're like, absolutely, go with it. And so it actually was a really great project. Like I was able to take a lot of my own knowledge and a lot of my own, you know, cooking and things like that and incorporate it into that. But through my years of working in Oneida Nation with, you know, other tribal members, it's like kind of a collaboration of a whole lot of programs that was making that farm to school presentation, you know, possible.
Having some fun today talking with Crystal Meltz. She is a dietitian our dietetics intern through the University of Wisconsin Green Bay, and is also a member of the Oneida Nation of Wisconsin. She's also the volunteer assistant to the Oneida Farmers Market Manager. So it's great to have her with us to talk about the food, the lesson plan that she has developed. We're going to talk about that a little bit, and about the three sisters, the Oneida Nation's three sisters. We mentioned one of them, corn, and we'll mention and talk about the other two, all three of them together. First, we need to take a look at the news and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. And when right after the news, we'll be back with Crystal Meltz, and we'll talk some more with her. And you can join in. Give a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or shoot us an email to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Well, we're talking a little about companion planting in your garden. We're talking about that because the Oneida Nation members often use it in their own planting, and they call it the Three Sisters Growing Tradition. Crystal Meltz, our guest today, she's a dietetics intern through the UW Green Bay and a member of the Oneida Nation of Wisconsin, a volunteer assistant to the Oneida Farmers Market Manager. Talking with us, and she'll be talking us through a farm-to-table lesson plan she created. We'll talk about the health needs she sees in her community and the importance of the mindfulness of our health. And you can join in. I hope you will. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And in fact, Joe from Wisconsin Rapids called and wanted to see if you had any thoughts on the sacredness of food. He feels like we as a culture and society seem to have moved away from that. We used to thank Mother Earth for food or have prayers before meals to appreciate the food. He says that's part of our nutrition too. So what do you think of that, Crystal?
I definitely would agree with him there. Part of our teachings here are some of the, teachings that I had learned is that, each of our plants have their own spirit, and that we should be thankful for them. And which is part of the lesson plan that I put in there. I kind of added an oral story to it, and it's regarding the three sisters and how when they were planted back in the day that the people forgot about them and didn't come back and didn't weed them and didn't water them and, acted with not great character to them. And so they spoke to the Creator and told them that they were wanting to leave, that the three sisters wanted to leave. And the Creator reminded them that, not only if they left would they be taking away the food and the spirits from the elders and also the children. And so then they went back and they talked to the people about how they needed to respect the three sisters and all of their foods. And so many of the ceremonies that take place throughout the year are based on our foods. The strawberry is the first fruit that comes up. And so that's one of the ceremonies right away. And so it's always honoring and being thankful for their growing seasons and, for the fruit that they do produce. So I think he definitely has it right, and we may be lacking there in an area.
Well, the three sisters, of course, we haven't even met. We mentioned corn, but the other two are beans
and
squash, right?
Yeah.
So why are they the three sisters? What makes those plants good?
They grow well together because, for one, they would sustain the nation, the tribes throughout the winter. So all of these things that would grow here in the fall time, they'd be able to process them so that they would be able to have food throughout the winter. So the three sisters, the corn, they grew the corn for first, and they would put them in mound systems, like 3 feet round mounds. Sometimes there'd be, you know, fish that would be buried underneath them or something. But like the soil was very well taken care of. And then in the mounds, the corn would be grown first. And so they would, you know, add 5 or 7 seeds in that circle around the top of the mound. And they would let it grow. And it would grow to be, you know, like 3 or 4 inches. And then they would come back with the beans. And it would be a pole bean. So it was a climbing bean. And so they would put those seeds around that, the corn that's already grown. And so as the bean would grow along with the corn stalk, and it would start to crawl up that corn stalk. And so it would use the strength of the corn stalk as it's growing. And it would also strengthen that corn from wind and whatnot. And so at the same time, the bean is putting nutrition and nitrogen back into the soil that the corn and the squash are taking out of the soil. So the squash would be grown, you know, around the mounds, in between the mounds, on the outside of the garden. And that was for a few different reasons. As the squash grows and crawls out, in the big leaves of the plant, it would help to shade the ground, and it would help keep the moisture into the ground and keep weeds down. But it also served as a purpose of keeping pests out of the garden. So obviously we know raccoons and little animals want to get into that corn, but they didn't like that prickly spines on the leaves or the vines of the squash plant, so they would be deterred from going in there. So they just worked very symbiotically together to create a great harvest.
Was this unique to the United Nations?
No, you know, if you start researching around, you will see that many indigenous tribes did very similar planting.
So, yeah, and in these days, garden experts I have on my gardening show call that companion planting.
Yeah,
So
and
it's
you'll even see, like, sometimes, like, they'll plant different flowers for pollinators, you know, like, we need our pollinators to come, and so they'll plant the flowers close to them, too, so that they are, you know, they're drawing our pollinators to our plant.
So the plants grow, and, well, let's talk about your slide set and or your lesson plan, your farm-to-table lesson plan in a bit more detail. So we've... Part of that lesson plan involves the beginning, the three sisters, and so forth. And then take us through what else is in that lesson plan.
So it starts off with the oral story, like I just said, and then it goes on and talks about just exactly what I was talking about with how the plants are grown together. And then it kind of separates them out a little bit more of how to say the word, how the Oneida word looks. For corn, beans, and squash, and the three sisters, and that was contributed by Oneida Nation Museum. So there were some students who had created those lessons, so I added that right into my lesson. And then also, when the corn is picked, so it's picked usually like in October, it starts to dry down. It has to be at a certain moisture content.
Yeah.
And so when they choose to start picking the corn, There's a big process, and it's fun, and it's we usually call it harvest and husking bee, but it, you know, the community all comes up because this is all done by hand. It's all hand harvested. So we have, you know, 6 to 8 acres of white corn that's been planted, and then it's all hand harvested. So community members will come out, or schools will come out, and we'll go out in the fields, and we'll pick corn, and then we bring it under a big tent, and you dump it out. And then there's chairs and circles, and there's so many stories going around, and there's laughter, and there's just so much camaraderie. And then under that tent is the next way of processing that corn, and it's, you know, husking it back, and we husk it back to 3 really strong husks, because from there it's going to go and get braided. And so braiding is a traditional method of drying the white corn. And we have tried drying the white corn many, many different ways, and it always comes back to being braided that the corn does the best drying out. And so there's many different lessons and you know, hands-on experiences for people to come out and actually do all of those, I don't want to call them chores, but to do all of that. And then...
tasks.
Yes, there's many tasks, and they're fun. But and then from there, you know, I explain cooking it. Because you can't just take the dried corn and start eating it. It's not... You would get sick. And so there's a process called nixtamalization, and that's using... Traditionally, it would be using hardwood ash. And then you boil down this corn, and the corn would get this big, you know, like bright, beautiful color to it. And then the hulls kind of start to peel off, and then you wash it and wash it and wash it. And then you do it again and again and again. And it's a very long process to get to the point of being able to eat this corn. And the corn itself, you know, like the nutritional properties is different than if you were going to grab just the sweet corn. Like the sweet corn would have a higher carbohydrate content because of the starches in there and the sweetness there. Whereas the traditional heirloom white corn is a Tuscarora flint corn, and it's more of a protein corn. There's definitely carbs in it, but that nixtamalization process releases the niacin and the nutrients in that corn, so they're available to us, you know, in the diet. So,
and then how is the corn used? Is it, well, explain, is it mashed or what do you do with that corn?
So once we take the hull off of it, then you can use it right there for making corn soup. And that would be probably one of the most common uses for the corn. But the cannery has also made it so possible where they started to dehydrate the corn, because the corn is a very sought after product, and it's not something that you can just go look up online and purchase. So they started dehydrating the corn and selling it like that, and it's probably one of their number one sellers. But you can also, in that, after you take the hull off of it, you dehydrate it just a little bit, dry it down, and then you can turn that into a flour. And that flour then is used to make like a cornbread, or you can use it like a thickener, starchy type stuff. But most commonly, it's a cornbread, and it's not the typical cornbread they use, you know, as baked and whatnot. It's a boiled bread, and that corn flour is mixed with very hot water and beans, and it's shaped into like a circle. We call it a wheel, and then it's softly boiled for like a half hour, and then that cornbread, usually people will either reboil it and warm it back up, or it's very commonly sliced and then kind of fried with a little bit of butter and add a little bit of honey on it, and it's very tasty. Another very common product is you make mush, corn mush, and that's more like a porridge. Like the corn is not hulled, like, so it's not boiled down in the water. The corn is actually roasted, like in an oven, and it's, turns like this golden brown color, and it smells delightful, kind of like popcorn just right before it's going to pop. But from that stage, that gets ground up, and then that is used like almost like a cereal or porridge. And very commonly, you add berries or maple syrup, and you have like a breakfast, or it's even a really great dessert. So I would say that those are the most common products. I put those in my presentation as well. But nowadays, you can see all sorts of experimenting going on, like tortilla shells being made with it, or, you know, they're using it to thicken soups, or they're putting it in chili instead of noodles, you know, things like that. And it's really neat to see all the different experimenting that's going on with the product.
Oh, man, you're making me hungry, Crystal.
It's so good.
You know what? Susie in New Berlin has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Susie.
Hi. Crystal, we may have met before. I'm Oneida as well, but down in the Milwaukee Sioux area. Sioux is the southeastern Oneida tribal services area for the Milwaukee area people, or southeastern Wisconsin, obviously. I actually co-taught an arts course, a summer arts course for the kids on the Three Sisters. I don't know if you ever saw our final product. It's a quilt, unusual kind of quilt. Anyway, I have a poem. It was written by Mary Jo Moore. I don't know if you've ever heard of her. about corn and the corn mother. Would you like to hear it?
Yes.
Yeah, that would be wonderful. Please do.
Okay. Okay, it's called Selu. Aware of what is happening to the children, corn woman walks the fields, carrying knowledge from where the good medicine grows, pulling truths from the stalks of corn, leaning into the wind. The teachings of long ago become renewed with every grain the children swallow. Keep in mind that you are a part of the whole, she reminds them. The future is planted within you. Give to yourselves lives to be proud of. Treat yourselves and others always with respect. The rocks are listening. The trees are listening. The eagles are listening. The rivers are listening. And the children? They are destined to hear the sounds of the sacred grains of wisdom growing inside the hearts.
Oh, my goodness.
I love that. It almost brings me to tears every time I read it.
Oh, I could imagine. And the author is Mary Jo Moore, did you say?
Moore, M-O-O-R-E. She is Eastern Cherokee. And do you want to know the book?
Yeah.
The book is called Returning to the Homeland, Cherokee Poetry and Short Stories, WorldCom Publishing, 1994. So I don't know if it's in print, but maybe we could get it back in print.
Yeah, wow. Wow, thank you.
Returning to the Homeland. And was she the author of the book as well?
I'm not sure because it's a compilation.
Compilation. Okay.
Well, it says Cherokee Poetry and Short Stories. So I don't know. I found it in a magazine. It was like in a Women's Day or something, or Edutopia, or I don't know. Yeah, I cut it out many years ago, but I thought, oh, my God, I've got to get this out and play it and then read it to her if she'll take it. So I can send it to you.
Yeah.
Would I send it to you, Crystal, just at Junhanqua?
No, actually, I guess. If you want to send it to Oneida Farmers Market at OneidaNation.org. It's actually OFM at OneidaNation.org.
Right. Okay.
Wonderful. Very good.
Susie, thank you so much for sharing that with us. Appreciate it very much. Well, that's a wonderful poem. A wonderful poem. Well, speaking of the Oneida Farmers Market, how is it doing?
Well, our season, our 2020 season is over, and we had some very, very big changes this year due to COVID. So one of the largest changes is that we did a drive-through market this year. So I think we were probably one of the only drive-through markets, at least in Northeast Wisconsin, that I am aware of. We usually have about 50 vendors, craft vendors, food vendors, hot food and stuff, and we did not have any of that this year. We had about 6 to 10 raw food vendors, like our essential food vendors. And I have to say, though, I think we did a really great job. And I ended up creating a survey also at the end of this farmer's market for Wello for my dietetic internship, because what I noticed is that we started drawing new customers from all over. Prior to our drive-through, they never had been with us before. And so I wanted to know why and how they found out about us. And so I created this survey, and it was really interesting because a lot of people, they came for the safety of COVID, but also because they have mobility issues and weren't able to do the big walks and all those things at the farmer's market. So it was, and they were so thankful and so happy. I mean, definitely there was, you know, some people that were not happy with what we decided to do, but honestly, it was safe, it was productive, and I think that our vendors were happy with it as well.
You know, maybe when it's safer and warmer, I could take a little trip, or our whole cast and crew could take a little trip to the Oneida Nation to see this in action. That'd be kind of fun to do.
And you could spend the entire day here. We could do the farmers market. I used to work for Oneida Tourism as well, so I know all of our spots, you know. and I know a little bit of the history, obviously. So it would absolutely, I would enjoy that. I would love to take you around.
That'd be great. Kel in Sugar Camp has a question. Kel, hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was wondering if there were any Wisconsin indigenous people who are working in plant physiology, researching your medicinal herbs and healing techniques, and also if you guys are apprenticing younger people to older people who have this knowledge so it's not lost.
So it's really interesting that you asked that question. I can only speak for Ona Nation because obviously I know the most about that, but in the last 2 years, we've had an indigenous food and healing group. And so it's taking our families and taking them out in the woods and showing them plants and medicines and also how to cook different foods and are using our indigenous foods. So definitely here, that's alive and strong over here. And we're definitely always teaching. It's in our schools. It's everywhere. As for some of the bigger things, I do know when I worked Oneida Market, I had the University of Wisconsin come through, and they, one of our herbs that we use is called number 6, but it's bergamot, and they were doing studies on it, and they had good promising results, and so that was really cool to see and hear.
Yeah, so there's, do you remember the department of at the UW that was involved in that?
I wish I did, but I don't remember. It's been a few years, but yeah, we have a lot of different colleges that come through doing tours and things in regards to this kind of stuff. So I apologize.
So it is going on, Kel. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And boy, it's been fun, Crystal. Is it that lesson plan can be, where do we find that lesson plan? Oh, actually, I think we have the lesson plan at WPR.org/Larry. You can go there and see the lesson plan.
There you go. And I know that if you download it to PowerPoint, like you can hear my voice. Like I voiced over all of it and I gave the whole plan. So just wanted to put that out there.
Well, it was great. I learned a few things that remembered a few things after watching. Like every pollinated hair on a cob of corn belongs to a kernel on that cob.
I love that.
Oh well, Crystal. Hopefully, we'll get a chance to meet you sometime, maybe this summer, when we can get up there and do a show with you. Thank you so much.
That would be wonderful. Thank you for having me, Larry. It was a pleasure.
Crystal Meltz, a dietetics intern through the UW Green Bay, a member of the Oneida Nation of Wisconsin, volunteer assistant to the Oneida Farmers Market Manager. Great to have her with us. I really enjoyed talking with her, and I learned something. Hope you did, too. Tomorrow we'll talk with a UW-Madison veterinarian about dealing with a pet who has been diagnosed with cancer. In the meantime, I hope you'll stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Lots more in store today.